Exodus, fourth chapter, text 23. Gata,
gata,
sangasya,
sangasya,
muktasya,
muktasya,
jnana,
jnana,
avastita,
avastita,
chetasaha,
chetasaha,
yogya,
yogya,
acharataha,
acharataha,
karma,
karma,
samagram,
samagram,
pravaliyate,
pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Jnana vastita chetasaha.
Jnana vastita chetasaha.
Yagyaya charata karma.
Yagyaya charata karma.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Vastita chetasaha,
jnana vastita chetasaha,
yagyaya charata karma,
yagyaya charata karma,
samagram pravaliyate,
samagram pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Jnana vastita chetasaha.
Jnana vastita chetasaha.
Yagyacharita karma.
Yagyacharita karma.
Samagram
pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Yagya
charita karma.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Jnana vastita chetasaha.
Jnana vastita chetasaha.
Yagyaya charita karma.
Yagyaya charita karma.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Jnana vastita chetasa.
Jnana vastita chetasa.
Yagyaya charita karma.
Yagyaya charita karma.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya muktasya.
Jnana
vastita chetasa.
Jnana vastita chetasa.
Yajnaya charita karma.
Yajnaya charita karma.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Samagram pravaliyate.
Gata sangasya.
Gata sangasya.
Of one unattached.
Of one attached
to the modes of material nature.
To the modes of material nature.
Muktasya.
Muktasya.
Of the liberated.
Of the liberated.
Jnana.
Jnana.
Avastita.
Avastita.
Situated in transcendence.
Situated in transcendence.
Chetasaha.
Chetasaha.
Whose wisdom.
Whose wisdom.
Yagyaya.
Yagyaya.
For the sake of yagya.
For the sake of yagya.
Krishna.
Krishna.
Acharataha.
Acharataha.
Acted.
Acted.
Karma.
Karma.
Work.
Work.
Samagram.
Samagram.
In total.
In total.
Pravaliyate.
Pravaliyate.
Merges entirely.
Merges entirely.
The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. Purport. Becoming fully Krishna conscious, one is freed from all dualities and thus is free from the contaminations of the material modes. He can become liberated because he knows his constitutional position in relationship with Krishna. And thus, his mind cannot be drawn from Krishna consciousness. Consequently, whatever he does for Krishna, who is the primeval Vishnu. Therefore, all his works are technically sacrifices, because sacrifice aims at satisfying the Supreme Person, Vishnu of Krishna. The resultant reactions to all such work certainly merge into transcendence, and one does not suffer material effects. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamaityam Dadhati Shabadantikam Gatasangasya Muktasya Jnana Vastita Chaitasaha Yagyaya Charita Karma Samagram Prabaliyate. This section of Bhagavad Gita is very important in explaining how our practical activities become transcendental. Gatasangasya Muktasya Jnana Vastita Chaitasa. Gatasanga means freed from attachment to the material nature. The Krishna conscious person knows, I'm not this body, and this, I'm not actually a part of this material world. So the bodily activities have to go on, and the activities of this world have to go on. But they're not within my control. They're finally controlled by Krishna. And I have to act for Krishna without attachment. The result of the work is up to Krishna, and the result of the work belongs to Krishna. Sometimes it may succeed, sometimes it may fail, but I have to be situated in Krishna consciousness. Gata Sangha. And Muktasya, liberated. The person in Krishna consciousness is a liberated soul for the same reason that he's acting on the transcendental platform, not on the material platform of gain and loss, but on the platform of trying to please Krishna rather than please his own, satisfy his own desires. He knows that when Krishna is pleased, I'll automatically be pleased. Just like the example is given, that if you decorate your face, in India they put little dots and decorate the face that way, and in America it's just makeup, blush and foundation and all that stuff. So when the face is nicely decorated, then when you look in the mirror and you see your face, you don't have to decorate that face also. It's automatically decorated because it's a reflection of your face. So we're all reflections of Krishna. When we act for the pleasure of Krishna and Krishna is pleased, we'll also be pleased automatically. When Krishna is pleased, we're automatically pleased. So one, Jnana Vastita Chaitasa. So Jnana Vastita, one who's situated in knowledge, Jnana, Chaitasa, in full Krishna consciousness. Yagyaya Acharata. Acharata means active. He's active. No one can refuse to act. Everyone has to be active. Inescapable. But we can act for maya, for illusion, or we can act for Krishna. So yajna, yajnaya charita. Yajna has two meanings. One is sacrifice. Sacrifice is, the Sanskrit word is yajna. So there are different kinds of sacrifices. They'll be described in the coming verses, a few verses from now. Different kinds of yajna, different kinds of sacrifice. And yajna also means Krishna or Vishnu. Krishna has so many names. One of his names is yajna. Krishna is identical with sacrifice, for he's the ultimate beneficiary of sacrifice. He's the person for whom sacrifice is to be made, sacrifice is to be performed. So his name is also yajna. So yajnaya charita karma. One acts in Krishna consciousness to please Krishna. That itself is a kind of sacrifice. A wife is cooking for her husband. That's sacrifice. She's dedicating her energy to please the husband or to please the family. So that's sacrifice. And that sacrifice is done out of love or out of duty. At least out of duty, if possible, out of love. But it's sacrifice. The man is sacrificing his time, his energy to support the family. It's sacrifice. So here, it's indicated that the ultimate person for whom we should sacrifice is Krishna. He is the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices. Krishna. Yajnaya acharita karma. And samagram pravaliyate. When one acts in that Krishna consciousness, then his work merges into transcendence. The work merges into transcendence. It's being done for transcendence. So it merges into... It's like sometimes a person is working to pay off his debts. He's run up a debt on his credit card. And now all of his work is merging into paying off his credit card debt. Or someone who's working in America, they say for the first, I don't know how many, 125 days of the year or whatever it is, all of his money is really just being merged into taxes. He doesn't really see a profit. He's seeing that, or whatever he sees. The fact is that so much of his expenditure is just merging into the national fund. Or sometimes a man is working hard and all the money he earns is all going into his wife's expenditure on the credit card. So here, the work is being done for Krishna, so it merges into Krishna. It's done for Krishna's interest. It's everything connected with that work is merging into Krishna. It's all being directed. Now my energy is being directed away from Krishna. And therefore, I'm also directing myself away from Krishna, turning away from Krishna. When I turn toward Krishna and give my energy to Krishna, then my work is merging into Krishna, the result is being given to Krishna, and finally, I'm merging into Krishna. Merging doesn't mean that I lose my identity, but it means that I become part of Krishna's spiritual world. Becoming part of Krishna's spiritual world. So how that happens will be further explained in the next verse. And are there any questions so far?
I actually have always had a question about this part of the Bhagavad Gita. That Krishna introduces this whole section about action by starting, talking to Arjuna. Another yuga, Arjuna is great prince who was so intelligent, as well as being a pure devotee, God is saying to him, the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. He starts off by making it seem that every action, the intricacy of every action, just walking, just you walk and you look at people around you, that's an action. And every one of those actions has a reaction. It's so intricate and entangled.
Therefore, no one can figure it out.
And how do you become free from that?
And no one can figure that out either.
From the reactions, because you're constantly acting.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, I'll do this and I'll get good karma, or I'll do that and I'll get good karma. But we get in so wrapped up in things that I did this for good karma, but this was kind of a little something on the side. Or I did this for good karma, but I didn't realize that it had bad karma associated with it also. Or I thought it was good, but it really wasn't good. There are so many ins and outs of it. I tried to be kind, but I actually did harm to someone. I tried to be nonviolent, but in the course of my nonviolence, I walked across my lawn and killed, 432 creatures that were underfoot. It's unlimitedly difficult to figure out.
But he's trying to explain in this chapter how you can become free from the reaction, all those reactions.
Yes. Yes.
But it's very difficult to understand how to do that. Because let's say a person in this room has to go to work. So they have that goal. But the act of getting to work, half the time, you're not even thinking. You just walk in, sitting on a bus or a train, you're moving. You're not even aware of the actions that you're doing. Or your mind is acting, your senses are acting.
Well, that's an opportunity, of course. If I'm on the bus or I'm on the train, I'm not thinking about it, I'm just going. That's an opportunity to become Krishna conscious. I have an acquaintance in Bombay. His whole life changed on his commute, his daily commute to work each day. He was living in the northern part of Bombay. He was working in the southern part of Bombay. And he attended a Bhagavad Gita class at our temple. And the result of the class was he thought, I should read this Bhagavad Gita. And he used to, on his commute, every day he would read the newspaper. Because in India everybody has a driver, you don't drive. You get a guy, he does the driving, and you sit. So he was a big guy also, so he had a driver. So then he got this Bhagavad Gita, and instead of reading the newspaper every day, he was reading the Bhagavad Gita every day. And the result was that he became a surrendered devotee of Krishna. He just realized everything while he was driving. And as you said, that's like what we call space out time. Time when we're not really conscious of what we're doing or what's going on. We're just kind of like enduring the commute. And in that time, one could become fully Krishna conscious.
There's an article in the latest BTG about turned the bus into like a Krishna bus, and they're playing lectures and Bhagavad Gita and things like that, and just posters on the bus in India.
Oh.
So you're saying that if our consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, in thinking of Krishna, then even though we're not couldn't possibly be aware of all the actions that we're even performing and what the reactions would be, if our consciousness is fixed on Krishna, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and in one sense, the Krishna conscious person becomes less and less concerned about so many details of unimportant material activities. He's focused. It's not that he's negligent, but actually taking it a different way, he's diligent about his activities, but his consciousness is like Krishna. And that's an art. Yoga, karma, sukosha. The art of all work.
it seems that from the discussion, from this discussion with Rameshwar that Prabhu, you've looked at what happens to the person who's engaging in karmic activity, what sort of karmic reactions he gets, and then on the other extreme, the positive extreme, you've talked about someone whose mind is fixed on Krishna, so then how he's free from reactions. Could you please discuss what happens to, this would be a question that would be probably a lot of devotees could relate to, what happens for the devotee who's, engaged in devotional service, follows Prabhupada's, basic rules, chanting 16 rounds, or trying to chant 16 rounds, practicing, following regular principles, but doesn't always have his mind 100% fixed on Krishna. So what about his actions when he sometimes spaces out on the bus or whatever? So what's the result for him?
Yeah, the result is he's making progress, but he hasn't yet perfected the art. He hasn't yet become expert, but he's moving forward. A person is diseased, and he's starting to take the pills and follow the diet. So it's not that instantly all the disease goes away and now he's free. But because he's following that regimen, he's becoming freed. Maybe while he's diseased, what he eats causes him discomfort, and that doesn't at once stop. But because he's following this system for purification, gradually he's becoming free. It's not like overnight. It's now I'm a devotee, and nothing affects me, and I'm just... But the more he chants Hare Krishna, the more he takes up devotional service, the more he finds very quickly that he's rising above the platform of material action and reaction and material entanglement. It's a question of practice and enthusiasm, determination, confidence, and patience. It takes some time. But if we do these things in the association of devotees, then we'll make progress.
Question. You mentioned that Krishna has the name Yajna because he accepts sacrifices. So when we were on a bus a couple weeks ago, one Christian gentleman was asking me about some of these things. You know, your God has so many different names according to his different activities, and where do you draw the line on who, what kind of name I can give him? Oh, I'll give Krishna a name that one advances toward him. Well, anyway, what you can invent unlimited Sanskrit names.
Mm-hmm.
What's a bona fide name, and what is just my I don't know what to call it.
Of course, Krishna has his names, but his names are unlimited. And from one point of view, one who knows the science of Krishna, he can describe Krishna in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Sanskrit language is just composed of description. Names are descriptive. The killer of this person, the subduer of that evil, the rescuer of the devotees. And, so when the name is given in perfect accord with scriptural accounts, that's also Krishna's name. But the easiest thing is that the names are found in scripture. We just take it, and we don't have to be creative. It's not required. But from another point of view, a Krishna conscious person will see Krishna in all the names. Satsrupa Maharaj was telling me one time, he was sitting with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was asking, the discussion was about people's names. And names all have some, some background. So
this name. So someone's name is carpenter. So Krishna is the person who fashions everything. So ultimately, that's the name of Krishna. And this name means king. Well, Krishna is the supreme name. That indicates he's the supreme king. That indicates Krishna. And another name means something else. So that indicates Krishna. Finally, everything indicates Krishna. So the pure devotee, everything reminds him of Krishna. But he has very particular names by which he's remembered. And that's taken from authentic scriptural literature. Something else?
Maharaj, you were saying that one day when we invest our energy for Krishna, then we automatically get into the path for transcendence. Mm-hmm. So does it occur in terms of as Atmanirvadan Prabhu was asking the question, like when one starts chanting some rounds and trying to practice devotion service. So after that, it happens like the situation in his life curves so that he can involve more and more in devotion service.
Everyone who's taken up chanting Hare Krishna has some experience that there's a difference. I wasn't chanting, and then I started chanting, and you see for yourself what the result is, how the mind becomes more free from anxiety, how consciousness becomes clear, how we start to see Krishna in different ways and think of Krishna in different ways and remember Krishna in different ways. So these things are within our experience. And the more we chant, the more we find that our Krishna consciousness increases. And there are things that we can do that will go the other way, that will get us, dirty up our consciousness again. Therefore, we're guided, don't do this, don't do this. They will have a contrary effect. Don't take drugs, don't eat, because that will cover it. So if someone observes these positive and negative principles, avoids these activities that drag us down, and takes up the positive chanting, then you'll see the result very quickly. Is that okay? Yeah?
I have a question.
Sure.
If I don't ask it now, it will bother me throughout. I know I used to know this when I used to study Gita back in Toronto, but I seem to have forgotten. Why is Krishna referred to as the masculine essence, and where does the feminine essence fit in?
Krishna is referred to as masculine because he is masculine. He's a person, and he's a masculine person. Masculine means predominating. The nature of the man is that he wants to take charge. He wants to be he wants to predominate. He's the person who takes initiative. Even we see in the dealings of in the animal kingdom, the cows don't run after the bulls. It works the other way. So the men take initiative. So Krishna's is male. He predominates everything. We're just trying to predominate something. He predominates everything. But he has his female counterpart also. That's Srimati Radharani.
Pardon me?
That's Srimati Radharani is the female counterpart of Krishna. Krishna is not alone. Krishna is with his energies. As the sun is present with the sunshine, the heat, the light. So Krishna also is present with his energies. So his spiritual energy, prominent spiritual energy, is called Srimati Radharani. And that energy has personal form, which is feminine. So Krishna alone is useless. as the sun alone is useless. If the sun stopped shining and it was just a dark planet, it wouldn't be the sun, it would be nothing. But the sun is glorious, the sun is powerful because of its energy. So the complete sun is the planet with that all-pervading energy. So Krishna is complete with Radharani. Maybe you've seen the picture on some of our books, how Krishna is playing his flute and his consort is there, Radharani. Some pictures are definitely there, some pictures you'll see. So that's the complete absolute truth, not Krishna alone.
Oh, he's not playing the flute.
The picture behind.
Oh, that's Vishnu.
What?
And the statue there.
Okay, we're all looking for Radha and Krishna.
The reason why I mention this is because.
There they are. And there they are. You know.
The reason why I mention it is
Radha,
because,
Krishna.
Especially in most parts of the world, for centuries, the feminine has been suppressed.
Has been suppressed.
Suppressed, and so we're at a point where we really are remembering the feminine aspects in all traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is very, you know, that's part of the work that I do in the way that I'm a service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really embodying the feminine aspect and
mm-hmm.
reminding.
Krishna is totally masculine, and Radharani is totally feminine. That's a unique conception of God, actually. Generally, God is perceived as, you know, that patriarchal person that everyone complains about these days. But here we find that the concept is more expansive, that the absolute truth is not only masculine, but consists of or comprehends the masculine principle and the feminine principle. And together they're complete. Shall we move on and see what's coming in the next verse? Yeah. We should.
I have one final little observation
mm-hmm.
that bothers me every day.
Oh.
Every day,
without fail, because of the intricacies of work, if someone is not Krishna conscious and they have achieved this human form of life, the reactions are setting them up for, I think, millions and millions of future births.
Mm.
Millions of births are going to be the result of their misuse of their human life.
Mm-hmm.
Not just one birth. Millions. So I'm living in this, I work in a city where I see tens of thousands of human embodied souls every day who are completely misused. They have no clue. They're doing all these actions. And if I take the time to think about it, I see them rushing to hell. They're rushing to being insects. They're rushing to being lower forms of life in their next birth. And as far as this male-female thing, every one of them is rushing to have millions of births as men and millions of births as women in whatever species they're in, because they can have billions of births. So those are the intricacies that bother me every single day of my life. I don't know how they're going to be saved from this, because it's right in front of my face that they are rushing to help, and we're all connected, we're souls, we're all part of Krishna, we're all part of the family. I'm supposed to see them as if they were my brother and sister or my mother,
mm-hmm.
and they're all dying in front of me and going to hell. So this every day I see this,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea how to save them. I mean, I have some ideas, but
I mean, we have an idea, fortunately,
but there's millions of them and they're not being saved. And it can be heartbreaking. It can be overwhelming when you see how many souls have achieved a human birth and are setting themselves up for millions of animal births before they get another human body again.
And Prabhupada said if I could even rescue one, I would consider my life successful.
It's overwhelming, especially in a crowded city when you see this. So just an observation, but it bothers me every day.
Yeah, devotee is bothered to see how others are suffering. Okay, let's move forward. One more verse, I think. Quite an important verse. Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir.
Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir.
Brahmagno Brahmanahutam.
Brahmagno Brahmanahutam.
Brahmaivatena Gantavyam.
Brahmaivatena Gantavyam.
Brahma Karma Samadhina.
Brahma Karma Samadhina.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Spiritual in nature.
Spiritual in nature.
Arpanam. Contribution.
Contribution.
Brahma.
Brahma.
The Supreme.
The Supreme.
Abhihi.
Abhihi.
Butter.
Butter.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Spiritual.
Spiritual.
Agnau.
Agnau.
In the fire of consummation.
In the fire of consummation.
Brahmana.
Brahmana.
By the spirit soul.
By the spirit soul.
Sutam.
Sutam.
Offered.
Offered.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Spiritual kingdom.
Spiritual kingdom.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Kena.
Kena.
By him.
By him.
Gantavyam.
Gantavyam.
To be reached.
To be reached.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Spiritual.
Spiritual.
Karma.
Karma.
In activities.
In activities.
Samadhina.
Samadhina.
By complete absorption.
By complete absorption.
A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. Purport. How activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness, and all of them will be described in the following verses. But for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. A conditioned soul entangled in material contamination is sure to act in material atmosphere, and yet he has to get out of such an environment. The process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. For example, a patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to overindulgence in milk products is cured by another milk product, namely curds. Now I should explain here, this is really Indian English. In India, what we call yogurt, they call curds. So this too much milk or too much of anything that you can't digest results in dysentery. That will be the effect. There'd be the bowels get all messed up and dysentery. So then, what's the cure for that? Actually, yogurt counteracts that effect. And what's yogurt? It's just milk. So the milk caused the problem. So why are you taking more milk? But this milk, now transformed, solves the same problem that the milk caused in another form. So here it's indicated that activities have gotten us into so much trouble. But when those activities are transformed by Krishna consciousness, same activities get us out of trouble. For example, by eating. Now I'm eating, but I'm getting all entangled in the karma of what I'm eating. Even if it's vegetarian food, so much goes on in the agribusiness, even the organic agribusiness, and there's so much exploitation and who knows how many insects they had to kill and what they're doing. Well, so many things are going on. And maybe the company is owned by some big conglomerate and I'm contributing to the bottom line of that conglomerate, which is doing who knows what kind of destructive activities. By eating I'm getting entangled. But when I offer the food to Krishna and then eat the Krishna prasadam, not only am I not getting further entangled, but I'm getting out of entanglement. I'm being released from the previous effects of entanglement because I'm eating this spiritual food. It's the same business, it's eating. And maybe it's even the same food, you know, carrots or asparagus or what have you. But now I'm being liberated by that eating. Whereas formerly I was being entangled. Materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness as set forth here in the Gita. This process is generally known as yajna, or activities, sacrifices, simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu or Krishna. The more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness, or for Vishnu only, the more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. The word Brahma, Brahman, means spiritual. The Lord is spiritual, and the rays of His transcendental body are called Brahmajyoti, His spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in that Brahmajyoti, but when the jyoti is covered by illusion, maya, or sense gratification, it is called material. This is very interesting. Actually, sarva kala vidam brahma. Vedic literature says everything's spiritual. Or there's nothing but the absolute. There's nothing but the absolute. So even the walls are also the absolute truth. The floor is the absolute truth. The flowers, the trees, my body, whatever exists is not outside of the absolute truth. Because the absolute truth is one, is the substance that includes everything. And at the same time, there are differences. And at the present moment, so much has been, my consciousness has separated itself from the absolute truth, or I'm looking away from the absolute truth, or I'm looking away from Krishna. Actually, nothing's separate from Krishna, but in my consciousness I'm thinking, this has nothing to do with Krishna, or that, or I don't even think that, I just don't recognize. I'm asleep to the connection. But when one wakes up, then he sees everything. I'll give you an example.
Will I? Let me think about it. Yeah, simple thing. Prabhupada hated to see fans running with no one in the room. He would see lights on or fans running and it would bother him. And he would insist, of course, that they be turned off. He was training us to turn them off. But what was his thinking? It wasn't just a conservationist ethic or simply penny-pinching that, oh, it's costing money. But he saw, this is Krishna's energy. This is Krishna's energy. And it's being wasted. He would see a faucet with water dripping. And he would see Krishna's energy is being wasted. Where we just see, either we don't see it, you know, fans are running, we don't even notice. Or we see it and we think, oh, we should be saving energy. The electricity costs money. Which is true. But Prabhupada was seeing that energy, that money, that everything is Krishna's energy. And therefore it has to be employed very carefully for Krishna's service. He was seeing, and that's one thing, you know, just the electricity, the fans, the lights, but that extends everywhere. Krishna's car, Krishna's land, Krishna's, name something, it's all Krishna. That's how Prabhupada was seeing. Everything is Krishna's energy, and that means it's integral with Krishna, because again, the energy is not separate from the person whose energy it is, as the sun is not separated from the sunshine. Everything exists is situated in the Brahma Jyoti. The Brahma Jyoti means the unlimited spiritual light of Krishna. But when that light is covered by illusion or maya, it's called material. And Prabhupada gives an example that the sun is covered by the clouds, or a vision of the sun is covered by the clouds. What's the cloud? It's a manifestation of the sunshine. Because the sun is evaporated water from the seas, and it's keeping it suspended up there in the cloud. So the cloud is also a product of the sunshine. But it's a product that blocks our vision of the sun. The maya is also Krishna's energy. Illusion, whose illusion is it? Where does the illusion come from? It also comes from Krishna. And why are we under it? Because we wanted it. So Krishna consciousness means, no, I don't want to be under that illusion. I want to see how everything is connected with Krishna. So the material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness. Thus the offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, the process of consumption, the contributor, and the result are all together Brahma, or the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth covered by maya is called matter. Matter dovetailed for the cause of the Absolute Truth regains its spiritual quality. In the Vedic tradition, there are sacrifices that are performed with the lighting of a fire and the offering of grains and clarified butter into the fire. It's a ritual. It's a ritual. So in that ritual, grains are offered, butter is offered, but into the fire. So here, the understanding is that even in that sacrifice, the fire represents Vishnu or Krishna. And I'm offering something to the Lord, which actually comes from the Lord. And now I'm offering it back. So the fire is spiritual, the butter that I'm offering in the fire is spiritual, if I'm offering grains in the fire, which is part of that ritual, that becomes spiritual. I become spiritual because I'm involved in offering these things back to their spiritual source. The place becomes spiritual. The people who are participating in this activity, everything becomes spiritual. Because everything here is now being offered to
Vishnu, or to God. And just, you know, a few feet over, maybe they're offering, they have butter and they have grains and they have fire, but it's all for themselves. I'll cook a fire, I'll have a fire so they can cook something, and they're offering it to themselves for enjoyment. Which, okay, it's done. The Krishna conscious person, he also has a fire, he may also be cooking, but he's offering first to Krishna, and then he's taking that food as prasada. He's becoming purified. When the mind is fully absorbed, Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahma, or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi, or trance. So we're offering our consciousness to Krishna. Krishna, consciousness. That offering is fundamental. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna, or sacrifice for the Absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, the contributor, the contribution, the consumption, the performer or leader of the performance, and the result or ultimate gain, everything becomes one in the Absolute, the Supreme Brahman. That is the method of Krishna consciousness. Are there some questions? Mm-hmm.
I understand theoretically the concept of not wanting to waste Krishna's energy. Mm-hmm. But when I think about it logically, and I think Krishna's energy is unlimited, so where's the scope for wasting it? Then it becomes a little bit of a dilemma for me. Like, how far do you take it? There's so many ways of going to the extreme and conserving so many different things.
From one point of view, you can look at it and say, well, everything's just the way it's supposed to be. But the Krishna conscious person sees that this should be used for Krishna's service. The disconnect is when there's no service. The fan is turning. And why is it turning? It's not turning for any good reason. It's not even serving any people. It's just mindlessly then left turning. So that means the mind is not engaged in Krishna's service. The energy is not engaged in Krishna's service. So in one sense, the most important thing is that the mind should be turned toward Krishna. Then when the mind is turned toward Krishna, practical activities will be turned toward Krishna.
I never need a fan. Why should we have a fan at all?
That's fine.
And for the sake of conserving Krishna's energy, what is the need for electricity at all? Or any of these things? We could take it to the extreme in an effort to...
Well, we use it for Krishna. We take the electricity and we use it for broadcasting Krishna consciousness. We have some purpose for that electricity. We run the lights and we read our books or invite people to come. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, one of the things which I find very challenging is sometimes when we perform some activities, and it can be for our sake, but since we are, you know, little aware of the philosophy, the mind can easily trick us. And then it becomes a kind of gray area where we don't know, you know, whether we are doing it for ourselves or it's really a Krishna conscious activity. So how should we deal with those?
Therefore, training by the bona fide spiritual master is wanted. The direction of the literature, we get some direction, do this, don't do that.
and the association of the devotees gives us guidance also. The more experienced devotees will advise the less experienced devotees, and the less experienced devotees will make progress in understanding. Is that okay?
You just now mentioned the bona fide spiritual master, mm-hmm. and I was wondering why can't Srila Prabhupada be our everyone else's bona fide spiritual master through his books? Why do we need a bona fide spiritual master who's currently on this?
Because you'll read the books. And then you'll think, well, I should do this, I should do that. But you have no confirmation, and you have no, when you go to school, why do you go to school and listen to professors? Why don't you just read books? If you're learning medicine, why don't you just read about surgery? Everything's there, actually, in the surgery text. Why do you go to the surgeon and say, please instruct me what to do? Or would you go to a surgeon who learned it that way? You know, he's read the books, he says, well, you know, I've actually been trained by the greatest surgeon in the world, by the person who's written the authoritative textbook that's used in all the... Would you go with that? No. There's quite a good article that appeared in... somewhere. I forget where I read it. Anyway, it's a non-fiction work. It's from a chapter from a book. I think the chapter is called The Learning Curve. And it was written by a good writer who is a surgeon. And he was recounting how he got started in surgery. And I forget what it was, what particular kind of procedure. But you learn, you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and then you have to do that. And he had the whole thing down, and then when he started to do it, he forgot this. And you know, whoever was watching him said, no, you forgot this. And he had to be reminded. And then, you know, embarrassed. And then whatever it was, the next time he forgot something else. And then the next time he's trying to get this needle into somebody's chest and it's not going because there's an art to it that you have to put it in at the right angle and the right place. And yeah, he sort of knew how to do it, but he'd never done it before. And then he was shown, no, you little more this way, a little more that way. And then the next time he kind of did better, and that, you know, now he says, you know, that kind of stuff is just like, does it without thinking. But in the beginning he needed so much instruction. Now he's gone on to other things, and he says, and now that's like also a learning curve. And then later that becomes routine. So there's training under the capable expert. That's wanted.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that role fulfilled by a Shiksha Guru just as easily?
Yeah. So guru means there's no difference. Shiksha means who gives instruction. Diksha means given initiation. An initiation is required, and people don't give initiation who aren't here. And Shiksha and Diksha Guru usually are the same person.
Because there are Prabhupada disciples I know who never actually encountered Prabhupada. They got initiated through mail or something. And
but they're in the process. You know, I may be the chief surgeon, maybe I don't train you, but I hand you over to George, and I say, George, you know, take Radhe over to, you know, the theater there and show him how to do a whatever kind of procedure. So you're under my guidance, but not that I have to personally do everything.
And how do we person that sort of guided our just in for Srila Prabhupada. How do we know that that's what he how do we know that Srila Prabhupada wanted that and wanted that for us as opposed to having Srila Prabhupada as a
How do we know that what
he's asking how do we know that Prabhupada wanted Diksha to continue after his
too much time on the internet.
Because he said about Diksha. Because he said so. Basically. The idea that people who've departed from the world continue to give spiritual initiation. It's just the weirdest idea in the world. I'm sort of perplexed how anyone takes it seriously, to tell you the truth. I find it, at first I found it like odd, now I find it like totally astonishing that anyone would take it seriously. In every part of every tradition, that's just not in the picture. The a guru, like, you know, the, even there's medical gurus and there's music gurus and there's astrology gurus, and everybody always learns from someone who's there. That's the whole, what's the use of parampara otherwise? Krishna says, I spoke to the sun god, he spoke to Manu, Manu spoke to Ikshaku, he was coming down. Well, why Krishna bother speaking to this, you know, why that way? Why doesn't Krishna said, I spoke originally to the sun god, and everybody, you know, that's enough. I do it once, and everybody just can take it from me. Here's Bhagavad Gita. Why does Krishna say, accept the spiritual master? Why doesn't Krishna say, read the book? He does say, read the book. He says, if you read the book, you're worshipping me by your intelligence. But when you read the book, it'll say, accept the spiritual master. You get these people, I mean, it's weird. You don't need a spiritual master, you only need Prabhupada. All you need is Prabhupada's books. You read the book, you need a spiritual master.
Thank you.
It's just, you know, it's a cockamamie idea, it's cuckoo.
Thank you for explaining that.
When when a devotee finds their spiritual master, that spiritual master is observing, studying that devotee to make sure that they're following all the practices. And when they finally are ready to give diksha to that devotee, what they're really doing is taking that devotee to Krishna. Now, that devotee can't be connected to Krishna if they have sinful reactions. So something has to happen to those sinful reactions. And that is the price that the guru gains out of his love for his disciple. He takes his disciple and presents that disciple to Krishna. So he takes on that. He takes those sinful reactions. And that's the relationship. And that doesn't happen from someone who's departed. That happens because the guru is connected to those who have been departed. And he's empowered in a disciplined line to do that. And it's a very intense experience for both the disciple and the guru.
If that person's taking
that person's karma. That person is loving you so much that they're taking your sinful reactions on themselves so that you can be free to go to Krishna. Imagine someone doing that for you. And then what do? In exchange for that, you make certain vows. You promise I won't be sinful anymore. I promise I'm going to chant. I promise I'll work for Krishna. I'll love Krishna. I'll try to dedicate my life. Because of what you've just done, I will, that you feel so indebted. And that's the
all over Prabhupada's books, and people are saying, it's all over Prabhupada's books that you need a spiritual master coming in the succession. And they say, you don't need succession, you just need Prabhupada's books. Like, huh? On my website, there's an extended discussion of this under the link about unusual doctrines. So if you go there, you can read pages and pages.
Jai visited your website. Mm-hmm. Jai told me just today. She said that she recently visited your website. So I'm sure you...
There's a whole section there dedicated to this unusual doctrine.
Any of the folks who are younger in devotional service have anything they want to ask Maharaj?
Are you there?
The quieter folks.
Yeah, we'd have to drag on for...
We have to serve the sun.
Good. So let's stop here. Thank you all very much.
Prabhupada ki jai. Sampadeva bhakta ki jai.